News time now, 8:13, and on the phone with me, I have Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, Leslie.
Hey, let's start with that. And I know that the council discussing this appeal of the community development director's decision for this development agreement of Silver Creek Village, specially panned area, is being deliberated by the council. And I know you can't say much there, but when we talk about ambiguous language, I mean, do we need to do a better job and just start listing out what we're thinking of when we use specific words?
You know, that's what's so frustrating to me is, and I try to do that, and I think the council tries to do that, where we try to study documents closely and try to make sure they're integrated and they make sense. And, you know, here's an example where you have a use chart attached as an exhibit that specifically calls out what they want to do, and then you have to look at other provisions and see if they can be reconciled and brought into harmony. And, you know, we think we've done a good job, but you never know until some little part of it gets parsed and subdivided into every syllable to see if it really works. But it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Is it time to relook at the amount of commercial that was approved in the village, and what kind of commercial was approved there?
You know, it may be 50,000 square feet is not very much, especially given what is happening with other parcels in the neighborhood. I mean, so we're buying the county and Mason Rec are buying this Florence Gilmore tract. We're close to closing on it. Now we've got our approvals from the EPA that after the Federal Register ran its course and no protests. And so now we're going to have a 125-acre parcel over there by Home Depot, which is right in this neighborhood, as you know. And we haven't figured out how it's going to be used, but it may have commercial. There's another, small parts of it. There's another landowner adjacent to it that has a plan in for some commercial. So it's hard to know what's really going to be there. But in the vacuum, that 50,000 feet, if you don't look at any of the other parcels, for 1,300 homes is probably too little. I think the issue here is the council seems hesitant to change the use of those two parcels away from Civic. You know, that it would be another discussion whether some of the residential gets converted to commercial, but there seemed to be a lot of resistance to changing it away from Civic, if I'm just reading between the lines.
So will this come back then to the council at your next meeting, the September 11th?
Probably. I don't know how heavy that agenda is. It's in our court. We took it under advisement, and we'll bring it back, and hopefully sooner rather than later, but sometimes it takes longer.
Okay. In other business, the council discussed, had a discussion concerning the annexation declaration areas. Chris, you've attended meetings of the Hideout City Council. What have they told you about Summit County's request to keep Summit County out of their declaration area?
Well, so we send them two letters that said, you know, kind of stay out. And then there was a meeting with Chair Roger Armstrong and I can't remember if Tom Fisher was there, with their mayor and some of their leaders. And it was polite and cordial. And then they basically ignored it all and submitted a map that did basically exactly what they said they were going to, with the exception that in the case of Park City Municipal Corp's Clark Ranch, which is a Florence Gilmore acquisition they made a few years ago, which is in Summit County, but in this area that they've wanted to propose in their annexation policy area, they took that out because Park City owned it. So I asked him point blank, I said, I thought you said you've heard all this great commentary and that you're going to follow it and reconcile it. And they said, oh, no, only if the municipality or the county owns the land. You know, obviously Summit County doesn't own any land over there. I mean, yet, I guess, or maybe never. And so I said, okay, fine, we'll see how that plays out. But it's an interesting thing because, you know, the reason Hideout wants all this land is they want, and that doesn't mean they're going to annex it all, but, you know, the first step is to show it in their plan, but they need revenue, and Wasatch County and Hideout probably want to densify things a lot more than we would and than our zoning would allow. And so we want to be careful. I think this plan that Park City proposed, which we really don't have a veto on, is I'd like to see that happen, see their plan get approved, which would be to pose in their annexation policy area basically the rest of Summit County terrain in that little corner around Quinn's Junction. And I have confidence that Park City would, if it were annexed, would zone it appropriately to preserve the entryway, the 248 corridor, and that it would, be in better custody there.
Yeah. You made an interesting comment, and since Park City also wants to expand its annexation area in Bonanza Flat into Wasatch County, Park City basically becomes the Hideout in that situation. But the difference is, as you're telling me, is that because the city owns the land as opposed to what the county's trying
well,
to do?
I'm saying that the courtesy that was afforded Park City by the town of Hideout was, because you own the land, we will voluntarily, unilaterally exclude it from our annexation policy area. So that's not to say that Wasatch County would do the same thing. The way I understand it, and I don't know if you heard from Rick or in the tape when I quizzed David Thomas on what rights a county has to object to a municipality's annexation, a municipality located in another county's reaching over the county line to annex land, and he basically claims we have a veto. And so Wasatch County would have, if that legal reasoning is correct, would have a veto on annexing Bonanza Flat.
So
if Park City were to do that, it's in their, they want to put it in their plan, but, and maybe, you know, at this point it's different because Park City owns it. It's going to have a conservation easement on it. It's, that card has already been played as to whether it's ever going to develop into anything. So, you know, in some ways it makes little difference whether it's in or out.
Yeah.
It's, you know, if you're Park City and you own it, you'd like it in your jurisdiction. That's probably on the wish list. It's not on the must-have list. It's different, but you're right. The same. It's the same kind of thing, only the Bonanza land has already been played. Its fate is sealed.
But what about those Quinn Junction property owners who are now in Summit County? I mean, what say do they get? I mean, what if they want to be part of Hideout?
Well, then I don't know the annexation rules well, but I think in order for Park City or Hideout to annex them, there has to be some consent, at least as to a percentage of property owners. You know, like I'm not an expert on that, but so I think they have that say. And I don't think that if Dave Thomas is correct, they can have a say, we want to pull up and move into Wasatch County. I don't think that's their prerogative, although if you read the papers, you can see in San Juan County there are some people that want to subdivide the county, split it, you know, and basically do that over other reasons. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I think they would have a say in terms of whether they want to be annexed.
All right. The council spent about an hour reviewing the financial audit, noting Matt Levitt's numbers on the county's net assets, net liabilities. Any further comment from you?
No, I mean, we didn't have it in advance to read, and it's kind of a draft because they're awaiting some reconciliation of some little thing. It, you know, the bottom line is that the county is in good shape, according to what we hear and see, and that we had an increase in our net asset position, which is tantamount to owner's equity in the corporate world. And of course, that's when we build infrastructure, it goes on our balance sheet, and we raised taxes to pay for it. And so it stands to reason we have more assets, and more net position. But there weren't any bombshells. It wasn't a super productive hour in some ways, because you'd think after an hour I'd be able to cite you chapter and verse, and, you know, it was necessary stuff, but
all right.
I didn't come away extremely enlightened, more so than I was before, other than that general statement I made.
All right. And finally, anything, any updates with regard to the Central Wasatch Commission?
You know, there's the commission has published a new draft bill for the proposed Central Wasatch National Conservation and Recreation Area Act. And we're going to be meeting on the 9th, because of Labor Day, we're jumping a week. And, you know, time will tell. It's been designed to deal with a lot of the comment that's been received, whether it will gain traction, which I hope it does in some form, it remains to be seen. But that's kind of the main thing right now that's new.
All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I think that's good. That was a good discussion.
All right. Chris, thanks for your time.
You're welcome. Bye.
Park City resident and Paralympian Chris Waddell has been named a finalist for the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Hall of Fame. He joins me now in studio to talk about that honor and how we can help make that happen. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks, Leslie.
Yeah. So how does this work? It was a nomination process to get to this point?
It's a nomination process. And I don't know what happened before this. They put out a list of athletes, and I'm glad to be on that list. Now it's a voting process. And there are sort of three parts of the voting. The first part is the general group, which is awards.teamusa.org. And people can go there and they can vote for 3 Paralympians, 5 Olympians, and 1 team. So it's like, you know, basketball team, sled hockey, or not what do you call it? A bobsled team. Hard early in the morning here, Leslie, to come up with the right words. But anyway, people can go and vote there on the 3rd of September. Then they have those are the finalists. And so hopefully we've gotten there, but it's a general vote. Then it's a vote of your peers as well, so Olympians and Paralympians, and then also the people who are intimately involved in both games, you know, so journalists and people who are involved in the organization and things like that and have been around the game. So
it's open now, the voting?
The voting is open until September 3rd.
Okay.
So and please then, vote. Hopefully vote for me. You know.
Right. So you're one of 9 Paralympians then that have been nominated. Who are some of the others? Do you know?
People that you would know, like Muffy Davis, who is a resident here in Park City. There are a few skiers who are on the group. Greg Menino, who skied with me almost my entire career. He preceded me a little bit as what we call a three-tracker, a single-leg amputee. A woman named Candace Cable, who in a lot of ways has done everything. She's won the Boston Marathon. She was an alpine skier. She was a Nordic skier. She's an amazing athlete. There's some swimmers, Trisha Zorn, who's won the most medals of any Paralympian. I think she has like 50 medals. So it was one of those. I looked at the list and I kind of thought, well, I'd love this to be a shoe-in, but I looked at the list and went, wow, this is a really impressive group of people here.
All right. But you, again, there's going to be 3 total of the Paralympians. So a third of you will you know, be named? Or
a third of us will be named, and they will name that by the 3rd of September, and then the induction is the beginning of November.
Okay. So did I read it right that this is going to be the first class inducted into the Olympic and Paralympic Hall of Fame since 2012? What happened?
Since 2012, and I don't know exactly what happened. I think it wasn't that much of a priority. There is now, they're building a museum in Colorado Springs, an Olympic and Paralympic museum. And I think that this really was the impetus that in some ways I'm just suspecting that they might not have had a place to house it. And it made it much more purposeful now to have the museum there. So they're putting a big effort to it. And I'm honored to be a part of it. It's one of those, you look at your heroes. And one of my biggest heroes in skiing was a woman named Diana Golden. I actually saw her at a ski race the year before my accident. And then we never overlapped on the team. She retired before I started. But I felt like I wanted to follow in her footsteps. And in 2005, she was inducted into the Hall of Fame in Chicago. They did it in Chicago that year. I had had some pretty major, 8 hours of back surgery that summer. So it was my first trip, but I didn't want to miss it. I flew to Chicago to be there to watch her get inducted. And I think it's an interesting thing. We always know who inspires us, but we don't necessarily know who we inspire. And I'm just kind of hoping to follow in her footsteps in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So how many Paralympic medals did you end up with?
I ended up with 13 Paralympic medals. So 12 in the winter. I won all four races in Lillehammer, so slalom, giant slalom, super G, and downhill. I had won in the summertime in the 200 meters in Sydney, a silver medal in 200 meters, and world championships in both winter and summer. And I think in some ways it's a decent resume. I look at these other people and I think, wow, this is really impressive. And I kind of am crossing my fingers.
Yeah. So is it just like any other sport, though? I mean, at some point you just kind of age out of it. I mean, could you go back and still win races?
Oh, I think that maybe in my mind, I think I could still win races. I think there's a bit of a fantasy. When I was, I now do a lot of the commentary for NBC for the Paralympics, both color for track and for skiing, and then opening and closing ceremonies. And in 2014, I think that was in Russia. That was when I looked at it and went, Maybe my mind has kind of said, I don't really want to take these risks anymore, and who knows. But I think that's part of how you end up in the Hall of Fame, voting at least, is that you've been out at a bit long enough and you're old enough.
Okay, so again, people have through September 3rd to go online, make their vote.
Right, and then they'll announce it on the 23rd of September, yeah. And then I believe it's the 1st of November that they do the induction.
Okay. In the meantime, so what else are you working on? I mean, you mentioned your broadcasting work, but what else do you do?
A lot of things right now. I mean, sometimes it seems like too many things. So one of the projects I'm working on is actually when I climbed the mountain, when I came off Kilimanjaro back in 2009, where actually this is coming up on the 10th anniversary of Kilimanjaro, the end of September. When I came off of that, my mother, who unfortunately last year, died unexpectedly. She was teaching a ski lesson, kind of a place like the NAC at Waterville Valley in New Hampshire, and had a heart issue and 71 years old and healthy and fit and, sort of a hummingbird kind of woman. She was just moving around all the time. But when I came back from Kilimanjaro, she said to me, "Well, you need to do a children's book about the climb." And I wrote it soon thereafter, but I didn't know how to draw, and I ended up learning how to draw. And so now I'm in the midst of trying to figure out how to do all the drawings for that to hopefully get that out for the 10th anniversary. I'm actually working on a television show. We've shot a pilot. It's called I Wish I Could. And with One Revolution, our mission is to turn perception of disability upside down. With I Wish I Could, we're turning perception of disability upside down by flipping the script in some ways. We have an expert with a disability who teaches an adventure to two people off the street. So we did one up in Juneau with a guy who was my roommate when I was on the ski team. And it's also seeing that particular location through the eyes of this person. So you become a local. And so I'm hoping to do that. We're planning to shoot a second one in Las Vegas, keeping fingers crossed. It would be sort of a skate park kind of thing, keeping my fingers crossed and hoping that it works with this one guy who's just absolutely spectacular in a wheelchair, who's done like double backflips and all this crazy stuff and everything. So I don't have him confirmed, so I'm not going to mention his name, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed on that. Still continuing to work on my memoir, which I've been publishing serially. I have taken a little bit of a hiatus. I sort of took a little hiatus after my mother. In some ways, it was hard emotionally to sort of reconnect with the story because she was such a huge part of my story, but wanting to come back to that. And obviously, doing with school ramping up, getting back into the name tags presentations, our school assembly program with One Revolution. And name tags is about the labels that we put on ourselves and others, which are often our limitations. I can't do this because of this, that, or other. And we're pretty good at that one. But it's a resilience-based program. Our motto is, it's not what happens to you, it's what you do with what happens to you. And it's intentionally universal that disability is one of those things that's obvious, but we all have our reasons why we're not going to do things. And the biggest obstacle is obviously the one that's right between our ears most often. And so that's what we're trying to get these kids, to help them try to find their unique voice, find their passion, and find a way that they want to contribute to the world. So I have, I think, 5 or 6 of those next week in Salt Lake, and then I'll be going to Vermont. I do this Kelly Brush ride out in Middlebury, Vermont, which is Middlebury College, is where I went to school, and Kelly had followed me on the ski team and had a skiing accident, ended up in a wheelchair as well. The ski team did a 100-mile bike ride to raise money to get her a monoski. They were far more successful than they anticipated, and it's become this amazing ski event. In a lot of ways, it's like a Jimmy Buffett concert for old ski racers, because you get like 4 generations of ski racers who come to this, parents and officials and skiers and everything. And last year, I think they had 900 people doing this ride that starts in Middlebury, goes up Lake Champlain. It's absolutely spectacular. It's one of the most beautiful times of the year. Leaves sometimes are moving, are coming into the colors, but sometimes not. So I'll do that, and I'll do some name tags throughout in Vermont, in New Hampshire, in Massachusetts, and then finish in New York, and then come back here.
Again, tell us the website where we can go vote.
The website to go vote is awards.teamusa.org. And if you want to learn more about One Revolution, you can go to one-revolution.org.
Okay. Good luck to you, Chris. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Leslie.
It's 8:37 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, with the hiring of a new cheerleading coach last year, the Park City High School Cheer Squad take it a new direction. In the studio to explain, I have Ashley Bear. She is the head coach of the high school cheerleading team. She's also joined by Park City High School senior Tatum Burdage, and who is a member of the squad. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So, Ashley, let's talk a little bit about your background and why you were interested in this job.
I have done cheer since I was 3 years old. I'm from Florida, so cheer is very big and competitive in the state of Florida. And I've done competitive cheer all through high school into collegiate cheer, and I did all-star cheer. I have 8 years of tumbling and gymnastics experience. So I just love this sport and what it can bring to young women. And I think it's just a great opportunity for girls to understand their impact on the community when it comes to sports.
Yeah, I think that's interesting that you consider this a sport.
Yes.
Yeah, which is sometimes it's not seen that way.
Yes, and we're working on that, and it's sometimes hard to, you know, require a lot from these athletes to have them with their academic requirements, the physical requirements, and then for them to know sometimes that they're not considered a sport. But they work really hard. We support every athletic program in the school, but alongside that, we compete in our own events. And we have a show cheer event, a game day event, and 4 competitions this year that we participate in that are very physically demanding. So it definitely is a sport.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that. But tell me about this year's squad. I mean, what are the requirements to participate?
Well, we have 29 girls on our team. And to try out, you're trying out initially for the game day division. And that is geared toward more traditional high school cheer, crowd leading, crowd involvement, and the spirit aspect of cheer. And then we have tryouts for what we call our comp team, which they compete in a division called show cheer. And that is more vigorous tumbling and stunting aspects of cheer, alongside of having the traditional cheer elements to it as well.
So is it the show cheer team that is, are the ones that go and compete?
Well, our both teams compete, but the show cheer team is the team that will go to nationals. If we qualify for nationals, they will go to Anaheim in California and compete at nationals.
Okay. So in terms of who you've got working on the team, you have a lot of athletes themselves, right, that just want to do something different? Or
yes. The difference between here and Florida, what I'm used to, is Florida has a youth program that kind of feeds into the high school program. Here we don't have that. So when the girls come into the high school cheer program, a lot of them have no prior cheer experience. So they're coming in fresh and learning all the basic technique and then being expected to compete at a national level by the end of a season. So it's definitely a lot of athletes. We have girls that have been figure skaters, skiers, dancers, soccer players, softball players, and they're just trying to, you know, get into something a little different.
Yeah. And then, so where do they show up? I mean, do they, are the cheerleaders at every game?
We cheer for all football games, most of the away games. We go to states. Last year when we made it to regionals, we got to compete, cheer at the Eccles Stadium, which was exciting. We cheer for all of basketball, and we cheer for volleyball at their state tournament. This year, we're going to be selling concessions for volleyball and for basketball. We go to wrestling spirit night or senior night, and sometimes the ice hockey team asks us to participate. So anytime that somebody wants cheer to be there for them, we do. We get, scholarships were given last year from Bright Futures. They asked us to be a part of that, so we cheered on the scholarship recipients. So we kind of do a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Do you have an idea how many events, though, that girls participate?
Oh, I know just this weekend alone, between we did Friday night's game, Saturday we went to an Alzheimer's walk, and then followed with the National Ability Center Summit Challenge, and then Sunday we worked with the Solomon Foundation for their fall sports registration events. So that's four events within 3 days. So we do as much as we can to get the girls out in the community and understanding their responsibility as ambassadors for the cheer program.
And we've both said girls, but this is not limited to just females, right?
No,
anybody can try out, right?
We would love to have some male athletes. It's becoming a very co-ed sport, and we would love to have more boys try out to be on the team. We didn't have any this year. We had one last year, and I'm hoping that the more competitive the cheer team appears to their peers, that hopefully we'll get more male athletes that want to come and be a part of the team.
Yeah, especially when you have some of the like freestyle like athletes, right?
Who
are used to the tumbles and the flips and all of that goes on with this.
Yeah, there are many times where at football, the football players will come and talk to the cheerleaders after the game, and I've watched a football player do a standing back tuck in his pads. And I've said, hey, you know, we would love to have you as a member of our team if you want to bring those athletic abilities to the cheer program. And we are willing to say after your football season, don't think you need to commit to both. And if you, after football ends, want to come out and be a part of the cheer team, we are definitely open to male athletes.
Great. Talk to me a little bit about, we've got the squad named for this year, and then what, there's another tryout then for the...
For the comp team. Yes, so the game day team has stunting elements and tumbling elements, but it's more crowd leading, crowd involvement, kind of sticking to the traditional views of what high school cheer is. But we also compete in show cheer. So the show cheer has more physical requirements when it comes to the tumbling passes, the elite stunts that they have to have, and pyramids that you're going to be committing to. So it's kind of more of a cheer background. So some of my newer girls are working on their skills to be able to be on that show cheer team. Doesn't mean they can't try out, but a lot of my returning girls that have competed on a national stage know exactly what the requirements are and look forward to that show cheer tryout.
Yeah, so of the 29, who would go on for the comp team?
We're going to take anywhere between 12 and 16, so it just depends on, you know, where our skill level's at. They have to have a standing back handspring as a requirement, so it depends on, you know, what they bring to tryouts.
Okay. You said that you'd hope to qualify for Cheer Nationals. When does that happen?
They only have two qualifiers here in Utah to qualify for nationals, and they are at the beginning of December and the beginning of January. So there are two of them, and we're going to attend both in hopes to qualify for nationals. You have to have a certain score, so we're going to go to both of them in hopes that we don't have any bobbles or falls or anything that could eliminate us from the ability to qualify. But last year we did really well, and two out of our three teams qualified at our first qualifier, and then the one team that did not participated in another qualifier, and we qualified in all three events to go to nationals. So we have a stunt team, and we had a pom team, and then our cheer team, our show cheer. So this year we're competing in stunt and show cheer for both of these qualifiers in hopes that we can qualify for nationals.
All right. Well, let us know how you do then.
Thank
come
you.
January,
yes.
Then. And then let's turn to you a little bit, Tatum. I mean, why is this something that you wanted to do?
I have decided to do cheer because my mom was actually a cheerleader at Park City High School also. And from what she told me ever since I was a little girl, I've always like wanted to do cheer. I was a dancer for 7.5 years prior. I had like no cheer experience or gymnastics. And I decided to do cheer because it looked fun and I wanted to be involved with the high school more. And it has changed my life. It made me more confident in myself and it's super fun. And I love being a part of the school and being at the football games and basketball games. And I love it. It's a great sport and it's different than dance, which I was used to. And it's different from any other team sports. And I really, really love it.
Yeah. How often do you practice?
We practice every other day during class. And then most of the time we practice after school as well on those same days.
Yeah. So a lot like a sports team would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
Hmm. My understanding is that it's not cheap to be on the cheerleading squad.
It is not cheap.
And I had always thought football was the most expensive, but Ashley, you're telling me off air that they get a lot of funding from the school.
Yeah, so because it is a sanctioned sport, the football team is allocated funds through the district, and they receive funding for their equipment and uniforms and things of that nature. They do have to fundraise for other costs, but we receive zero funding from the school or the district, so we have to fundraise for everything when it comes to our mats, when it comes to competitions and all of our gear, all of our uniforms, everything that we need to have a successful season, signs, banners, flags, all of these things that are a part of the school and help bring school spirit have to be paid for through our pockets and our families and our fundraising. So there's zero funding brought in from the school.
Can you apply for funding?
I don't believe so because we're not sanctioned. But they are working on that. So I know that they're working to make cheer a sanctioned sport, and it just takes time to kind of figure out all of the directions that it's going to take for everything to come together and get it as a sanctioned sport. Lacrosse got sanctioned this year, so we're just kind of waiting in line and hoping that cheer is sanctioned soon.
Yeah. All right, so Tatum, tell us a little bit. You got a number of fundraisers coming up. Tell us about those.
Yeah, we do. We have some of our mini cheer clinics. So on we have our Miners' Day Parade on September 2nd, and the girls that participate and the cheerleaders will be walking down Main Street on the day and performing cheers that they learned. Then they will be learning those on August 31st, and all of that is $35. And we also have a halftime show on September 6th, and those practices for those days will be the 4th and the 5th, and that's $50. And if you want to be a part of both of those events, it's $75.
Okay, so these are for kids, younger kids then,
yes,
that want to participate.
Mm-hmm. All school-age students are welcome to participate. We have some that come from the high school and some that come from the junior high, the middle school, elementary school. All students are student-aged kids are invited to come out and participate, and we have different choreography and things that are geared towards each individual age group.
Okay, and then you have an upcoming fundraiser there at Versante Restaurant. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we have one at the Versante Restaurant, which is inside the Peaks Hotel. It is on September 19th, and when you order what you want, and if you mention the Park City Cheerleaders, 25% of their profit is sent to us for raising money in our fundraiser.
Okay, and then what's happening with homecoming?
So we're starting this new thing for the high school, the homecoming parade. It's going to be on September 19th, and it's going to be down Main Street, and the cheerleaders and all fall sports teams and administration, student council and everything will be a part of it, and we'll be riding down Main Street.
Yes, that'll be September 18th at 5:30, and we're hoping to just kind of get the community involved in supporting the high school. We are a one school town, and we want to just kind of bring something where cheer brings that spirit to the entire community, not just the students at the school. So administration's agreed to participate, and we have some fun little surprises for that event. It's been opened up to all of the sports, offered at the school, even activities, clubs. So we're hoping to just bring a lot of spirit coming down Main Street. And then they have the, what is it that student council is hosting that evening?
Oh, yes, the bonfire?
No.
Or
the, what's the game, the football game?
Oh, the football game. It's
the girls play
Powder Puff game.
Sorry, my apologies. Yes. So the Powder Puff game will follow directly after the parade. So we're hoping to just bring all of that spirit right to the high school, have Powder Puff game, and the football players will be supporting the cheerleaders, cheerleaders supporting football players, and it's just going to be a very spirited event coming on the 18th.
Okay. All right, Ashley and Tatum, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, we just want to thank you for having us and just kind of shine some light on cheer and hope that the community can participate in any of our fundraisers. You'll see us out and about. We have a website. If you go to the pcminers.us school site, it has all sports listed. Click on cheer. You'll see all of our sports that we have offered and all of our fundraisers for the future.
Okay. Hey, good luck to you guys.
Thank you so much.
KPCW News Time now, 8:51. Good morning. Joining me now in the studio with our special events calendar, I've got Jenny Dearson, Special Events Manager. Good morning.
Good morning.
So we've got lots going on. It's a three-day weekend. We're going to kick it off Saturday with the point-to-point.
Yeah, so this weekend we do have point-to-point mountain bike race. That's one of the most popular races in the state. That's starting out at Quinn's Junction in Round Valley in the morning. I think it's really important. It works through all of the resorts, so Deer Valley, Park City Base, as well as Canyons, and the event will end at Skull Candy. This is an important event, and the course is marked. The best way to get through it this weekend, again, that's Saturday morning, is if you want to hit the trails. In the morning, you should be going to Park City Mountain, Canyons, and Utah Olympic Park, and after 1 o'clock back into town around Deer Valley and Round Valley. So kind of in the morning, head out kind of towards the county, and then in the afternoon back into the city if you're looking to avoid trail impacts and still enjoy the trails.
Okay. Silly Market returns?
Silly Market returns, and there's just a few markets left. This is historically one of the busiest market dates on the street and for the weekend. Silly Market has done a lot to continue to help mitigate traffic and transportation, and this will be one of the weekends where they have additional direct route from the high school. So if you want to park at the school district and take that direct route to the Silly Market, of course, we also have the city's transit system running with some extra buses as well. But again, they just help out with that additional direct route to Main Street.
Okay. And let's see. Then, of course, it's Miner's Day on Monday.
Yes. So at the Silly Market, Park City Rotary will be selling their balls for running of the balls. Monday does include all of the festivities. Those start at 7 a.m. with breakfast at the park. Of course, there's also the fun run and then the running of the balls, which is around 10:45. Parade starts at 11, and then there's lots of fun stuff down at the park. Of course, the historic mucking and drilling, kids' games, food, and the skate jump jam.
Okay. Let's see. What else do people need to know in terms of the traffic and parking?
So parking in China Bridge for the event between 8 and 1 is going to be $10. That's a flat rate fee. Transit, again, is running with increased transit from the school district to historic Main Street. And there will be a bus lane up on Deer Valley Drive to help expedite that transit for the event this coming week. As always, there's increased residential mitigation as well, and please do not cut through residential neighborhoods. I think it's super important. Make sure that if you are in the Old Town area, please do not park on Main Street or Park Avenue on Monday starting at 6 a.m. So if you're a resident, just a reminder to put your car in your driveway just for the parade route. We do anticipate roads will close for the parade around 8 o'clock in the morning. And then they're expected to be reopened by about 1 o'clock.
Okay. And then tomorrow we've got Bike to Work and School Day?
Yes, it is Bike to Work and School Day tomorrow. I just want to remind folks, please pay extra attention in the morning. There'll be lots of kiddos out there riding their bikes, specifically on 248 around the construction area. And then I also did want to remind everyone to check out the book sale at the Park City Library. It is their annual book sale, and they have some good deals there, so make sure to stop by and check that out. And then also, I do want to continue to remind people, we are using the text alert system during special events. So if you're not registered for that, please do, and you can just text PC Events to 888-777. We push out transportation and emergency information.
Okay. Anything else?
No. I'll be back in just a couple of weeks to talk about Autumn Aloft as we roll into the fall. And then also next weekend is Hike for Hunger up at Deer Valley Resort.
Okay. Jenny, thanks.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:55.